Kyle Hatley's powerhouse performance in the Kansas City Rep production and Iliad has won rave reviews. This is a one-man production, and it's an extremely physical performance. Homer's The Iliad depicts several weeks in the 10th and final year of the Trojan War, and this production brings key episodes of the epic poem to life through the voice of the poet. And the poet is Kyle Hatley. He's the Rep's resident director, whose performance Robert Trussell from The Star called stunning, and he praised Hatley for making this production his own. And Kyle, so good to have you here, and congratulations.
Thank you for having me here.
And I can't believe you've got the energy to come in here and talk about this, and you've been going you're mid run with this performance. And how are you holding up?
I'm great. Great, actually. I've learned more about myself as an actor in this production than I ever have before, specifically vocally.
How's the voice holding up?
So far, so good. You know, the
little hoarse, maybe, but not much.
It's a little strained, but there's a if I drink water all day long and get my sleep, I'm good. That's what I've learned anyway.
Really?
If I get at least 6 to 8 hours of sleep, I'm recharged.
Yeah.
But it's the two show days that sneak up on me.
Yes. Two shows a day. How do you handle that?
You know, it reminds me, it reminds me a lot of football. It's the weirdest thing, but it feels
You're the football player who became an actor.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. And the only thing missing really is the smell of cut grass. You know what I mean? It's the same sweat. It's the same physical pain. It's the same concentration.
Yeah.
You know,
so you wanted to do this role. Why? Again, it's 90 minutes. You're sort of on it the whole time. What drew you to this? This is torture chamber, I guess you put yourself through.
Yeah. Well, it's Eric Rosen was working on our artistic director was working on a play at the Sundance Theater Lab. And at the same time, Dennis O'Hare and Lisa Peterson were conjuring this and writing this. And at the Sundance Lab, the artists that are there for that weekend or that week rather will share what they're working on with the other artists.
Yeah.
And Eric got to see that. And that was the first time that once he got a hold of that, he sent us the script. And for 4 years, it's been on our season planning.
You want to get to
board.
To a list, yeah.
Yeah. So it's been sitting there, and we've always wanted to do it. At first, I really wanted to direct it. And the more we kept – every year that would go by that we didn't end up programming it, we got more excited about it actually. It just didn't seem to fit into certain seasons. Mm-hmm. But this season being the 50th anniversary season, our theme for the season when we were picking plays were plays that and stories that changed the world.
Mm-hmm.
So it fit perfectly into this season. And that was at some point down the line, Jerry Giannacchio, our director and producing director at The Rep, talked to me about possibly being in it, which I secretly wanted to do.
Oh, really?
I was an actor first, and then I became a director. And so almost every play that I'm itching to direct, there's a part of me that wants to play every role
sure,
in it.
Sure.
And not in the way that most actors might. I think for me, like, I want to get to know these characters. I want to get to know the story from the inside out.
Yeah.
Kind of. And this one in particularly, the fact that it's literally – it's inherently theatrical. It does what I believe theater should do, which is it takes the old and collides it with the new, and we find something together that's never been seen before or felt before, but yet it feels familiar. And it also it's just the basic premise of storytelling and the transformational power of storytelling, like how mm-hmm. how a simple story and even just a one guy can or one person can tell a story and it can have an effect on you, an intimate effect on you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we were kind of seeking from the beginning. But well, I can't even say that we were seeking that. That's just what we felt in the text that was written by the two authors.
Yeah.
That it was a conversation with a large audience about something that we need to pay attention to right now through the lens of the oldest text in Western literature.
So this story is about what? Remind our listeners who may not be familiar with the Iliad and you know what this story is all about.
Absolutely. It's nearly a 3,000-year-old text.
Yes.
Supposedly or possibly written down. I would say written down by Homer, not created by Homer.
And we're pretty sure it's accurate, but we don't know for sure, right?
Correct, yeah. Mm-hmm. And there are an infinite number of translations and versions of an Iliad. But it's essentially about the last year of a 10-year siege where the Greeks have come onto the shore of the Trojans and for 10 years they've been fighting because Paris has stolen Paris, who is a Trojan, has stolen Helen, who is married to Menelaus, who is Greek, away from them, brought her to Troy. He also stole a bunch of other things as well, lots mm-hmm. of treasure, etc., which supposedly started the whole war. So the Greeks show up on the shore, and really I think they use that as yes, they want to win their honor back because Helen was stolen, but yes, they want to sort of expand their territory as well. The Greeks at that particular time were conquering one city at a time, one country at a time, and trying to expand their own mm-hmm. Their own kingdom. And essentially an Iliad focuses on the last part of the last year of this 10-year siege, and it comes down to this this argument between Achilles and Agamemnon. Agamemnon, who is who's the king of the Greeks, who he's magnanimous, he's full of himself, he is the epitome of an evil king, mm-hmm. and he steals. It's weird to say, but he steals this girl that Achilles stole from the Trojans, and this upsets Achilles, and he swears never to fight again for Agamemnon and for the Greeks, which the Greeks are terrified about because Achilles is the greatest warrior that ever lived, and so without Achilles, they're sure to be doomed. And then Hector, who is the sort of counterpart of Achilles on the Trojan side, is this really he's detailed in the book as this really strong, noble man, and Achilles is sort of detailed as this godlike warrior, just full of rage. Mm-hmm. And so at one point along the line, Patroclus, who is Achilles' friend, is so angry at Achilles for not fighting because the Greeks are just getting slaughtered by the Trojans, that he goes to Achilles and he says, "Let me put on your armor. Please let me put on your armor, and they might think I'm you, and then mm-hmm. we'll have a chance." And then Hector, thinking that he's coming across Achilles, kills Patroclus, which sends Achilles into a rage because Patroclus was his best friend, his closest friend, and this guy Hector murdered him. And so Achilles basically gives up his promise to never fight for Agamemnon, and he kills Hector.
And this production then is sort of a testament, a statement about war, right? Yeah, and yeah. You deal a lot with war here. The enduring lessons of this 3,000-year-old statement written down that lingers today is what?
We get a question about whether it's anti-war or pro-war, and it's really neither. It is an unflinching, unapologetic look at what it means to live through war, not just
graphic
from the war,
in some cases.
Graphic, very, very graphic, and unapologetically so. Like mm-hmm. they don't most of the translations of an Iliad, they do not hold back mm-hmm. in terms of how they describe a
person's
death.
And you don't
death.
Either in this production,
correct? Mm-hmm. But at the same time, like this story takes a very close look at that kind of description and those moments of war, but they also take a look at the other people that the war affects, like wives and mothers and fathers and sons and brothers, and how the ripple effect of one action can, you know, thunderously sort of explode through their communities, and what it can do to the rest of their lives, to the rest of their culture, and it's. So it doesn't point at whether or not war is a good thing or war is a bad thing. It points at what are we doing? What have we been doing since this Trojan War? And the play does a beautiful job. The writers do this beautiful job of really talking about right now and all of the – it runs the gauntlet of time from the Trojan War to right now.
I was going to say, at one point in this production, you tick off what seems like every war that ever happened on this planet. And I'm wondering just physically, how do you do that? How difficult was it for you to keep that list in your head? Because those who have seen this thing said they were just – stunned by that moment in the production.
Yeah, well, we are too. Every time it goes through, without it's one of those things that when you when I first read it, I never thought about memorizing it because I was thinking about directing it. But, you know, you're reading through this beautiful, amazing adaptation, and then it gets to this page where the poet is trying to remember a war to give you an example, and then he just keeps flipping off all of these – just rattling off all these wars. And
there's dozens.
Dozens. As you're reading it, it's 4.5 pages of wars, just war. So when I knew that I would be performing this, I was really scared about that part. I was also sort of turned on by that part as well, to be honest with you.
So how did you approach memorizing 4.5 pages of this list?
Yeah.
Not to forget about the rest of the production, but
not at all. Absolutely. It's really a muscle memorization thing, and that was my goal from the beginning, was to basically have what writers call a snake in the door, a snake at the door week, which basically means you're trapped inside. You can't do anything else but focus and obsess over the text. And the last thing I memorized was that list, that catalog of wars.
How did you do it? I mean, did you have a trick that you used to get there? Or?
Yeah, well, kind of. I always highlight my script in certain ways, and I always score my script with a pencil. In other words, like sort of chop it up into beats and really make sure that the whole thing has its thoughts sort of very clear on page. And with the list of wars, it's kind of weird to do that, right? So I color coded it, and I used 6 different highlighters, and every 5 wars had a different color. And then once I started memorizing it, I knew which color followed which, because it was always – you know, if it was blue, purple, red, yellow, then the next series would be blue, purple, red, yellow. So you always knew which shade of color you were dipping into.
And then this list chronological?
It's almost chronological. It's mysteriously not in a couple of places. But I think that's because you know, some of them go the Bolivian War of Independence, Argentine War of Independence, Mexican War of Independence, Venezuelan War of Independence, War of 1812, Colombian, Chilean, Peruvian, and Ecuadorian Wars of Independence. So you can see that War of 1812 is kind of slammed right before you get to Colombian, Chilean, Peruvian, and Ecuadorian Wars of Independence. And in a way, it breaks the audience's expectation of that rhythm. But it also provides – once you start memorizing it, it does provide little – well, for me anyway, little keystones of knowing where you are in that list, that like, oh yeah, there's an interruption here to what seems like a natural flow of Wars of Independence, Wars of Independence, Wars of Independence, War of 1812, Wars of Independence, et cetera. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So when you get through this list, you're obviously making a very strong statement to the audience.
Correct.
Of look what we are doing to ourselves.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So in just a moment, we go from one of the most graphic descriptions of a death in the entire text of the Iliad, and we travel from that moment through time to right now, in a matter of minutes, without a breath. And it's kind of it's weird how I remember the first time we ran the whole thing from beginning to end in rehearsal. The whole room felt it, including me. We were surprised by what that list of war does when it just sort of, I mean, it almost teleports you from one moment to another moment, and you go through this weird emotional ownership of the war. That's the thing, is that like, you're like, oh, I remember reading about that war in high school. Oh, I remember reading about that war in college.
Did you recognize a lot of the wars? Did they ring a bell with you at some point?
Yeah absolutely. Mm-hmm. That and we, it was also kind of it was interesting. Ed Matheny, who's our grant writer at the Rep, has been an extraordinarily important part of our process by providing information about an Iliad and about the writers and about the Homer and about all of these wars and about what the significance might mean or how they hold weight in our production. And it's been like a history class all over again, a very moving history class.
Kyle Hatley is my guest. He's starring in the Kansas City Rep's production of An Iliad. It runs through February 15th. For tickets, 816-235-2700, or just go to kcrep.org. If you want to join our conversation with Kyle, 816-235-2888 is our phone number here, 816-235-2888. Florence called to ask if there's a connection between the Achilles tendon and the Achilles that Kyle is talking about.
You know, there is. I don't. I, for the life of me, I can't remember exactly.
I think Achilles was brought down by a blow to the area where that tendon resides, and thus it carries his name even now, I guess.
Yeah. That there was an opening in his armor. I've heard that version. I've also heard a couple of other versions, and I'm not sure which one's particularly accurate. I know that some translations sort of sway in that direction, and others sort of. I
was struck.
You.
Some performers have turned down this role just because the thought of doing a multi-date run is just too overwhelming to them. But you didn't hesitate, it doesn't sound like.
Absolutely not. I would.
Really?
As painful and as uncomfortable and as vulnerable as this show can make me. I feel ugly when I come off the stage, and I mean
because...
that because like I've at some point somewhere along the line, and like by about 20 minutes into it, 25 minutes into it, it's a blur to me. And I know that like when
because you're just racing, things are racing.
And I
feel out of control sometimes.
I'm never out of control, but I always feel like it's. Like I'm surfing or something has taken me and I'm riding something and if I fall off ahead or fall off behind, then I know I've lost control. So far, thankfully, I haven't felt like I've lost control yet. But it's when the wind catches the sails of this thing, which always happens when the muse shows up at about 15, 20 minutes into the play, that it sort of takes you over in a way. If you just let it, if you let the words do their work, and keep up the physicality of it, then, I know I must look like a train wreck up there in certain scenes, and I'm always grateful for the comedic moments because I need them as much as the audience needs them. It's something that I'm oddly not afraid of in terms of what I have to do to get the story told. I'm excited by it, I think.
My wife wanted to know how much of this is improvised as you go through.
You know, that's a great question. It's actually written to sound as though it is. Like, there, all the stutters, all the blank thoughts, all the unfinished thoughts, it's all written in.
You're kidding me.
I'm not kidding. All of the sort of the ums and the uhs and the sort of like lingering unfinished thoughts are all written in because it's about this guy, this poet, who's kind of damned to repeat this story and to tell this story for new audiences. Until he doesn't have to tell it anymore, until there isn't a need to hear these stories anymore, which, you know, that list of wars will tell us there has never not been a time where we don't need to hear it because, unfortunately, we can't seem to stop our rage.
Does that work for you, having even the ums and the ahs?
It helps. You know, Dennis O'Hare, the original actor and the co-writer, was there on opening night. And afterwards, he said something remarkable to me that I'll never forget that helps me out with this. I went up to him and I missed a few lines and flubbed a few parts and whatnot. And he goes, oh, don't worry about that. That's not the actor's fault. That's the poet's fault. And you need to remember that when the poet leaves stage, the poet needs to tell himself, oh, I need to remember to get Andromache right next time.
Yeah.
And then he wants to sharpen himself every time he walks off stage so he doesn't have to repeat this, but also so he can get the story as clear as possible to the audience.
Wow.
So your own actor's instincts to perform at its best is saved and kind of nurtured by the poet's need to do the same thing. So if you mess up, it's okay. The poet would mess up. You know what I mean? Because it's such an undertaking.
Let's go to some phone calls here. Let's go to Ruth from Kansas City, Missouri. Ruth, you're on Up to Date. Nice to have you. You're on with Kyle Hatley.
Hi. I saw the production yesterday, and it is magnificent. I took my 12-year-old grandson, and he's just a regular kid, and he sees war on TV and movies and video games, and he wasn't sure he wanted to do this, and he loved it. And I really encourage kids to go. It was fantastic. Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Ruth, it's pretty graphic. Was that okay with your 12-year-old son?
Are you kidding? On the way there, he says, why don't we just go see American Sniper instead?
Okay.
I said, no.
Yeah.
We're not going to do that. So,
yeah, your grandson, yeah. I should have said.
And I know a lot of it was over his head, but. Man, he got it.
Yeah, that's wonderful to hear. And you know, we've actually heard some of the responses we've heard are when we get to some of those graphic moments, of which there's nothing on stage to show it other than just the musician and the poet. But people will, in some parts, close their eyes And that's – and I've seen it. Ray, the musician, and I have both seen it from the stage where when we talk about a certain moment, people will actually close their eyes. And it reminds me of, you know, like radio theater
wow.
or audio theater when
exactly.
when your imagination fills in the blanks. And that's where theater becomes the most powerful, when the audience takes ownership of what
yeah.
they're seeing.
It was a wonderful experience for us to have together.
Yeah, Ruth, thank you for the good call. I sure appreciate it.
Thank you.
Well, Kyle, you said you'd be comfortable doing just a little snippet from this production
sure.
of An Iliad at the Rep. What do you want to do?
There is a moment where, well, right when the muse shows up, the muse is played by Ray Castries, our musician on stage, and the poet and the muse together make an excellent team, and the poet without the muse at the beginning of the show is a little... A little lost.
Yeah.
And so this is just a brief section, just one page of right when the poet shows up, when the story really starts to cook
mm-hmm.
From the beginning between Achilles and Agamemnon. And the reason Agamemnon is sort of the crux of why things have gone down the way they've gone down. Okay. So.
This is Kyle Hatley from the Iliad. And again, as you brace yourself here, the Kansas City Rep's production of An Iliad runs through February 15th. For tickets, 816-235-2700. Kyle.
9 years in. We're all camped out on that beach, bad enough. Only now it's night, and the men are suddenly getting very sick. 1 minute they're choking on black blood. The next... there is a massive fire burning down the beach, but the fire is not wood. It's corpses. They're burning the corpses of men and mules and dogs. They've all been infected by the plague. What's going on? I'll tell you. We've angered the gods. Agamemnon, our king, our commander, has taken as the spoils of war this girl, gorgeous, 15 years old. And she happens to be the daughter of a priest of Apollo. And the old man comes to Agamemnon with a cart piled high. Please, take these gifts, this ransom. Agamemnon says no. The priest offers to pray for the Greeks, if only he'll give him his daughter back. Agamemnon says no. All the Greek commanders come to Agamemnon, and they beg him to give her back. Agamemnon says no. Well, the priest is heartsick. He goes to Apollo, and Apollo gets mad. You ever seen an angry god? Apollo takes these arrows and he covers the tips in sickness, in plague, nasty stuff. The arrows clanged at his back as the god quaked with rage. And over against the ships, he drops to a knee and lets fly a shaft. And a terrifying clash rang out from the great silver bow. Tongue. Infection. Disease. Death. There's only one way to end the plague. Agamemnon has to give the girl back.
Boy, that's Kyle Hatley again in the production of An Iliad. And so when you get through one of these things, does the crew sort of know to leave you alone? Are you spent? Are you done?
I'm spent, but it's a team, so we're all spent together in a way. And when I get off stage, I always have a shower in the dressing room, so I have to just like football, I have to shower down. And
there's a great story. How did you get from football to the theater?
Well, it's sadly very simple. I played football all the way up until my just before my college year, and for 13 years I played, and it was the best memories of my life, really. And I fell in love with theater a little bit before that ended. And I wasn't sure. I wasn't sure if I wanted – that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to play football the rest of my life. Mm. But everyone got bigger than me.
And, funny how that happens.
Yeah,
describes me too. I loved it. And then pretty soon you can't do it anymore.
Yeah.
Hey, it's been so great to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
Good luck. Hang in there with this very physical production.
Well,
so good to have you. Good
Thank
luck.
Thank you so much.
Again, that's Kyle Hatley. The production of An Iliad runs through February 15th. For tickets, 816-235-2700.